Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James and welcome to the show, the big fat Fulham Championship preview podcast of the season is here. The league kicks off in just over 24 hours and Fulham's campaign kicks off in just over 72. At a full Craven Cottage, the words are bliss coming out of my mouth against Neil Warnock's Middlesbrough. I mean, can you get more championship than that? Can't wait to be back. And previewing the 21-22 season with me today is Fulham's writer for The Athletic, Peter Rutzler.
Hey, Sammy, how's it going?
Fine, thank you. And Mr. Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners. Hello, Sammy. Hello, Peter. It's nice to be back.
Yeah, lovely to have you back, Jack. And obviously, it's a heady time to be a Fulham fan, it feels like, at the moment. The kind of... the dreariness of relegation is gone. The pre-season optimism is here and lots of people are tipping Fulham to do very, very well. So it's been a nice week to be a Fulham fan from that perspective. We'll see how we're feeling come Sunday evening, whether that party is well and truly crashed. Before we start, if you want to get Peter's articles on The Athletic, including today an exclusive interview with Tim Ream, which is well worth a read, make sure you subscribe to The Athletic and you can save a third on your subscription. Go to theathletic.com/Fulham pod. That's theathletic.com/Fulham pod. And of course, there's still about 3 weeks left of the transfer window, Peter's favorite thing. So if you want all the best analysis on all of the incoming and potentially outgoing transfers for Fulham as well, it is well worth subscribing to The Athletic, theathletic.com/Fulham pod. And also, Jack, you were just saying before we started, another great article on The Athletic that you were enjoying last night, if you enjoy European football.
Yeah, obviously, my soft spot for Betis is well documented, but there's an article with Andy Mitten sort of following them around on their pre-season, which they did in England, the base at St. George's Park, and it was a really interesting read. So yeah, just a little bit different, a little bit off the beaten track, but a really nice article.
Yeah, of course. The Athletic doesn't just cover Fulham. It covers every team in the Premier League and wider European football as well. So well worth subscribing. All right, let's get into it. We're going to get into some questions in part two. But first of all, we haven't done a podcast since the Charlton pre-season friendly. Myself and Jack went together. We had a stop at our old favourite stomping ground, the Duke of Cornwall, beforehand, Jack. And then we ended up in the Crabtree when the match got delayed for an hour. It was just so nice to be back at the cottage on Saturday. I don't know about you, like the game wasn't that interesting for the main part as an actual spectacle. Obviously from a Fulham perspective, it was interesting to see how we're shaping up for this season. But just first and foremost, how nice was it to be back at the cottage on Sunday?
Yeah, absolutely. It was incredibly enjoyable and just a really nice kind of atmosphere. It wasn't particularly busy, but you know, people were just delighted to be back. I think it was all smiles, and that's always nice to see, right? And there's a nice atmosphere around Fulham, I think, in general at the moment. And you mentioned it there at the top, but that kind of the dreariness of relegation has seemed to have passed us by a little bit now. You know, the fact that people weren't really allowed there, fans weren't allowed in, and we kind of missed the whole season, I think in some ways is a positive, because you know we're going back in kind of fresh with aspirational hopes, and it feels like the entire club at the moment, you know, the fact that we haven't really lost any players, the fact that we've strengthened a little bit, and it looks like there's a couple more coming in, and if there's a new manager who is, you know, ostensibly going to play attacking, you know, free-flowing football, there's just a general sense, I think, around the club at the moment that things are on the up now. Whether that's a fleeting sense and we're back in I don't know, 24 months, having exactly the same conversations that we're having now, perhaps, and maybe my optimism is misplaced. But just at the moment, I'm just enjoying the fact that people are delighted to be back, confident that Fulham are going to do well this season, maybe not as well as everyone expecting, sure, but at least win games and look to be pushing on in the upper echelons of the table. And I think in general, that means that the place is a smilier place to be about. And I think it showed at the preseason game on Saturday.
I mean, I was thinking about this, Peter. You obviously started covering Fulham at the beginning of last season. A preseason friendly against Charlton is the largest attendance you'll have seen at Craven Cottage.
Well, yeah, since I started covering Fulham, yeah, no, it will have been. blimey, yeah, it's been exactly a year, hasn't it? Because the playoff final was exactly a year yesterday from time of recording. Yeah, so that was sort of my seminal moment when Joe Bryan strikes in extra time. That's my.
You didn't know which way you were going to be sent.
No. Could have been very, very different. But Joe Bryan wielded the axe of fate with his left boot. But yeah, no, it was really nice. It was very nice for me to get back into the press box as opposed to sitting in a wooden chair without power and a screen. So now I'm living in luxury again in the middle of the Johnny Haynes. It was, as Jack says, it does feel very positive at the moment. Almost that sense, you know, that the clouds sort of passed a little bit and there's a clearing and we can all sort of look forward a little bit more, but obviously the football hasn't properly started yet. So we'll see what happens once Neil Warnock's lot arrive on Sunday.
And what did you make of the Charlton game, Peter? It didn't scream out, this is my first 11 that's going to start against Middlesbrough. And the headline players really were Francois and Carvalho, who linked up so brilliantly for the kind of one real moment of quality in the match. But overall, I thought that there was good performances across the pitch. Tim Ream got a lot of plaudits as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was a little, I don't know, it wasn't the greatest performance. I was slightly underwhelmed. I mean, it was Charlton, it was League One opposition. Sure, they're looking to get back into the Championship, but I did feel it was, it wasn't all guns blazing, but I don't think it could be a few weeks into Silva's reign. But, you know, as you say, Francois and Carvalho really did steal the show. I was so impressed with Francois. I mean, he's one we talked about a bit last season. He's had his trouble with injuries. But he was so composed on the ball. I think he was the most proactive in midfield. And obviously, that was shown through his assist, where he showed his understanding with Carvalho. Obviously, they've been playing with the 23s for a while. But I'd never really seen him play in that sort of midfield role in a two. I mean, I've only seen him a few times. But with the 23s and even when he's come on for the first team, he's always been in different positions. He's always been very versatile. And while on the one hand, that's very helpful, but actually focusing on his actual position in midfield, I thought it was excellent in both boxes, really.
Yeah, there was that one moment in the first half where the ball fell from the sky and I think it was Francois and two other Charlton players and Francois just did this magic touch which just took them both out of the game and he like pressed on forward with the ball and found a pass and it was just like his match basically sums up in a nutshell, really. And I think you could tell that those two actually were maybe just putting in that little bit extra effort than maybe some of the players that will know that they're starting on Saturday. You know, that much would be said, Jack, about Mitrovic's kind of non-performance, barely touched the ball. But I feel like you had to temper that with Mitrovic just needed a run out. He doesn't need confidence or to get four in a preseason friendly against Charlton.
No, when he catches fire, he will stay on fire, and I'm not particularly worried about it. I thought, to be honest, he looked like he'd lost some weight. I think he looked like he was a little bit leaner, and perhaps not as sharp as we might have hoped. But you know, at the end of the day, it is a preseason game. It's about getting minutes under the belt. It's about getting yourself into shape. And actually, what I really liked was about the way that Fulham tried to create chances and the development. We saw fullbacks hitting the byline for the first time in a long time, right? It was there were shades of Slavisa under that. And I think there was that element that we could see how Fulham were looking to build. And I think that's the most important thing in a preseason game. We often say on ranks that, you know, the results actually don't matter. It's how you play, how you score, how you concede that actually matters in these kind of games. And what was really, really encouraging was the fact that our fullbacks were being encouraged to overlap. We were being asked to do pullbacks into the box. Now, we're obviously not quite used to that yet. There are a lot of them falling on deaf ears. There's still not quite that late arrivals that we'd be hoping for. But the fact that Fulham seemed to have a structure in terms of their attacking patterns and they were starting to build things in the final third that looked like they could be set routines and set kind of ways to unlock defences felt like something that was a positive and perhaps been missing under Parker. So, yeah, it wasn't the greatest game of all time. I thought there were positives to take out of it. Rightly so, I thought Francois was the best player on the park as well. He was absolutely outrageously good for long periods of it, and not even just the kind of highlight reel moments, but the fact that he shielded so well, the fact that he was able to, his off-the-ball running was excellent. He was able to track defensively and make a difference in that third as well. I thought all round he was just really, really quite good. And look, we'll be part of this squad, I think, going forward. I think he's done enough to prove that he's good enough at this level and will be good enough to make a claim, if not to start on Sunday, perhaps. But yeah, no, it was the patterns that I was pleased with, and the fact that we were creating in those kind of senses. The wide players looked like they had a kind of driven idea of what they wanted to do to come off that wing or to go down to let the underlaps and overlaps fly. And yeah, I was really kind of pleased with that aspect of it, I think, more than anything else.
Just on Francois as well, because obviously I think we mentioned it in a previous pod, but he was looking at the Australian squad for the Olympics, which is obviously going on now. Obviously that hasn't happened, and he's come in for preseason and sort of had that opportunity with Silva. I don't really think there was a sort of an expectation that he would make an impact in the way that he has. But he genuinely has made such a big impact. He's had good performances in different games, particularly the Southampton game, which was drawn 1-1 behind closed doors, I think. Feedback from that was really, really positive about him. And as Jack says, you know, he's going to have a role this season. It really is unlikely that he's going to go on loan or anything like that. And it's pretty impressive for him to have managed to have forced himself into that contention, considering the strength and depth that Fulham have in that area, to now be very much involved in the squad set for this season. And you know, I mean, speaking to Silva afterwards, and for sure it's a week before the season starts and we're young players, but, you know, I asked him if he thought that these guys would actually be involved, and obviously we can see that for Fabio, but, you know, his point was it is a week before the season. So if you're starting a week before the season, then you've got a pretty good chance of being involved. So that's really encouraging and actually really, really impressive from him, considering the setbacks with injuries he's had, and now he's very much in the picture. I think under Scott Parker as well, he was earmarked for that, which is why we saw him at the end of the season coming on against Newcastle. So that's encouraging. And I do agree with Jack about patterns. I think it's really clear what Silva wants his side to do. Obviously, there was the goal. Breaking through the lines, great movement from Carvalho off Mitrovic. He seems to really thrive in picking up those pockets. And I think that's where Mitrovic can be so effective, sometimes not by doing anything, just drawing people to him as a magnet, especially in this division. And as Jack says, the cutbacks, sometimes going direct from the centre halves as well, more often, which is encouraging. And I guess it's just about now making sure that Fulham pick up those results while they still adapt. And the fact that they did that against Charlton, I think, is an encouraging sign. There was a clean sheet. Yes, it's weaker opposition, but those are the things you want to get used to and keep doing as the season progresses.
There's one more bit that's kind of crucial there, and you kind of touched on it, Peter, is how close Carvalho was to Mitrovic for long periods. You know, having that kind of support run, having that ability to make sure that there are players in and around Mitrovic was something that we kind of mourned last year. And we said that often he's isolated, often he's not got the players to work off. It just doesn't really, you know, often happen for him when he's on his own and asked to do it all by himself. Now, the fact that Carvalho basically played as a second striker in that kind of 10 role, the fact that the wingers were asked to come inside and start to fill out that zone kind of on the edge of the box in what they call the half space, was a really nice thing. I think it made a real difference, and it allowed Mitrovic the kind of freedom to wander around. And yes, he wasn't particularly effective, but you saw the spaces open up for Cabano, for Knockhart, for Carvalho. And part of that is just getting people around Mitrovic, because defenders are terrified of him, and rightly so. He's a cheat code at this level. And I think that when you get to a point where defenders are so worried about Mitrovic that the likes of, you know, Carvalho, the likes of Harry Wilson, I think in particular, are going to thrive off that extra space that's created because people are so scared of what Alexander Mitrovic can do.
Yeah, and it, you are right that at times it looks almost like a 4-4-2 with Carvalho up supporting Mitrovic up that high. I mean, there's not a chance that Carvalho could really do a job for us in the 10 this season, Peter. I guess it depends what Kearney's injury status is at the moment, and you'd imagine he would be first choice for that. But then maybe it's between Carvalho and Wilson. And then the fact that Wilson can go out wide, so can Carvalho, they might kind of switch up a little bit. But I really think Carvalho is not just here to be a bench player and occasionally play the last 5 minutes.
No, I don't think so either, Sam. I think he's going to be really involved. He's had a lot of minutes in preseason. As you say, can play wide, can play through the middle. And we've seen it. I think every performance, he's been impressive. I mean, we're talking back to the Premier League as well, and that's not easy. We know he can score goals. He's good. He's good when you can see the whites of the post. And as Jack was outlining there, he's very effective at linking up with Mitrovic. Now, of course, a lot will come down to Tom Kearney, and Marco Silva has spoken positively about Kearney and where he sees him in his team. But there are question marks about his fitness. I mean, that's just inevitable. It's about 9 months since we last saw him play. He hinted that he's sort of close, but I guess he's been sort of close for a while. So it's hard to really read into it too much about where he is and how long it may be before we see Tom Kearney back. But either way, in terms of options Fulham have in those forward areas, it's, you know, they are really impressive and ridiculous for the Championship level. I mean, that's no point buttering it up. I mean, even with Cabano and Knockhart, who started on Saturday, you'd think, well, that's really, really solid. But then you throw in Harry Wilson from the bench. Harry Wilson is probably lower Premier League at the very least now. Last time he's with Derby, I mean, he scored so many goals. And if you add those to Mitrovic, or at least take the burden off him, it does make a difference. And then you've got Carvalho, who's very much an unknown. And I think what will benefit Carvalho is the fact that there are those rotation options. There are ways in which he can be rested, can be taken out of the limelight. Because a player like him, if he is as influential as he threatens to be in games, he can be targeted. So just having those options to mix things up is important. But he is young, so we don't want to get too carried away. But I mean, every time we see him, I mean, he's impressive.
Jack, I've watched listened to several Championship 1 to 24 shows this week. It's a very popular thing to do. Not the top 20 are kind of the kings of this. If you haven't listened to that podcast yet, the Championship 1 to 24 is not the top 20. I don't know what you're doing.
I'd also chuck in James Alcott's here. Very, very
good. Yeah, James Alcott as well. I haven't watched James Alcott's yet, but I will listen to Not the Top 20. I've also watched Benjamin Bloom's and Gab Sutton's. All of them have Fulham first.
So does James. There you are. Spoiler. James does too.
Okay. Nathan Lyons asks the question, does all the talk of Fulham should piss the league make you more nervous for the upcoming season? Because it does for me. I very much share Nathan's sentiment. I can't handle all the compliments almost is the stage that I'm at here. I can see why. Logically, it seems to make so much sense. Fulham have such a strong squad, but well, what's the title of this podcast?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Look, there's so much obviously to go. It's a long old season. It's the Championship. Anything can happen, et cetera, every cliche under the sun. But it is, if you look at the Fulham squad right now, and you look at how it's panning out and how the squad currently looks, that there is no way that this Fulham squad should not go up automatically. Not necessarily win the league, because I think that Sheffield United are also in a particularly good place. And I actually think that West Brom have rebuilt quite nicely for what Ismail wants to do. So I'm not suggesting that Fulham have to go up at top. But I do think that if this squad is kept together as it currently is, then the Fulham, anything less than an automatic promotion is, I think, a disappointment from a squad-based perspective. Now, how that actually pans out in real life is obviously a different question. And how this squad looks in 27 days' time when the window shuts is another question entirely, right? And if this squad is been depleted by then, if we've seen offers that come in that are, you know, that we cannot deal with, if offers come in for the likes of Tosin and Gisa, suddenly the squad looks a little bit less, you know, completely and utterly watertight. And so I suppose that, yes, at the moment, it makes sense for Fulham to be the favourites for automatic promotion. It makes Fulham to be favourites to win the league, sure. But there's a lot going on here which involves, you know, stuff that at the moment is outside of our control, outside of what we can foresee. So I would suggest that, yeah, you could take everything with a pinch of salt until August 31, right? Where things start to change a little bit. And in that regard, sure, I'm a little bit nervous, but more than that, I'm a little bit nervous as to where we will be at that point. It's not so much the, you know, if Fulham start the campaign with four wins on the trot and, you know, with 12 points on the 31st of August, and you'd imagine that players would be less likely to be like, I actually want to leave, because they'd be like, we could do this, you know, we could go and absolutely hammer championship. If Fulham lose their first three, you're going to see players being like, I am not doing this. Like, there is no way that, you know, that the players are going to want to buy into that. So a lot kind of rests on how this starts, on how the squad looks then, and on how we replace them if those players do go. So yeah, that's my kind of caveat for the season.
I feel like a lot falls on Sunday in a way. I think that's one of the most difficult matches that we have in our opening month. Millwall away as well, I think, will be a hugely difficult one. A lot of people have rightly tipped Millwall to be right up there this season. They haven't really lost any players. Gary Rowett's a good manager. Peter, what's your thoughts with Fulham's position going into this season and the plaudits that are coming our way?
Yeah, I think Jack summed it up really nicely. I think August is a massive month, isn't it? I mean, what we're looking at now could be very different come September, but at the same time, we could end up with the same situation as we are with 12 points in the bank, and suddenly it's okay. Yeah, there's no doubting. But I guess when you're making a preview, you're looking at what's there in front of you. And right now, Fulham squad is ridiculous for this level. I think. I think it's inevitable there'll be more offers. We've seen Valencia try and take Anguissa on a loan, but I think it was a loan without a loan fee, which I just don't think was going to wash. That's the thing. I guess that was almost like a reminder that, you know, the likes of Tosin or Harrison Reed or Alexander Mitrovic, who's had bids from Dinamo Moscow pushed away. As you look at it, and when you look at the squad from back to front, there aren't really any weaknesses. You've got players, you've got promotion experience, you've got a coach who's got a very impressive CV. I think there will be concerns about Silva, I think, to a little extent, because, you know, he's unproven at this level. He's got a point to prove. Will he be able to stamp his style on not just Fulham in a short amount of time, but also in this division? And yeah, Sunday's really big, and Sunday's a really good test. I think as we've sort of mentioned, you know, Middlesbrough are probably one of those teams looking at the playoffs this year. You can't underestimate Neil Warnock. You know, I guess he has a reputation for being something of an old guard figure. I don't want to say dinosaur because it's not true, because he is actually quite innovative and willing to try new things. You can see the fact that they've been trying to compete with Fulham for Rodrigo Muniz, and I think they're bringing in an Argentine number 10, Martin Pereiro.
They bought in a new data analysis team and recruitment side, and that's, I think, where these are coming from. They've also done quite well out of the lower leagues. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Peter. It's not it's really easy to lump Warnock into a category and be like, that's what he does. But, you know, Middlesbrough are trying to be creative, and I think it's important to remember that.
And yeah, absolutely. So that's going to be a really tough test so early on into the Silva project. But when you compare it to West Brom and Sheffield United, who are the two sides who look most likely to stop Fulham getting the automatics, Fulham starts a little nicer. I know West Brom got Bournemouth on the opening day, and then they play Sheffield United, I think, second or third game in, I think. So, I mean, the championship is always a difficult division. It's always very tough when there's so many games. And the fact that Fulham have good squad depth, it plays to their advantage. The thing is, I can't see the other sides being able to sustain a consistent run in a way that may challenge those that have come down. I think with West Brom and the way Valerian Ismail wants his team to play, it's very unique. Well, actually, to be fair, so is Dovisa Jukanovic and Sheffield United, and I think that'll be a bit of a shock for them. But I just think the way Ismail wants that West Brom team to play may come as a bit of a bit more of a shock, and he may need a little more time. So yeah, all down to adaptation period. So I've just sort of rambled a bit there, but it's all down to adaptation period. And then you look at those chasing Bournemouth, good squad. Will that squad, same as Fulham, will it be the way it looks right now come the end of August? I can't really see it. Dan Juma, I think, will definitely go. If they can keep David Brooks, I think he will be a really important player for them. But I can't see them really pushing into the automatics. And then you're looking at everyone else as sort of dark horses, really. Middlesbrough, Millwall, you mentioned. Even Queen's Park Rangers, you've got themselves into a really good position now. Stoke City as well is the other one I wanted to mention under Michael O'Neill. I feel like they've sort of turned a corner a little bit, and I think they could be a team that could push on too. So those are the teams, but then will they push automatics? It's hard to say at this point, but yeah, I think if you take as it is, Fulham are in a really good spot.
Well, on that vein, we'll take a break, and then afterwards I think let's do some pre-season predictions that will definitely come back to bite us come May.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy James here, and I'm joined by Peter Rutzler.
Hello.
And Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners.
Okay, let's do some predictions for the 21-22 season. And I always think these things come back to bite. I don't know if necessarily a club podcast should be delving too much into this, because it feels like we can only lose by doing these. But alas, I think it's what the people want at this time of year. We won't do like a full 24-1 because I don't think that's really our remit, but we'll just do a few, some from a Fulham perspective, some from a slightly wider championship perspective as well. So my first question to both of you is, where will Fulham finish this season?
Top. I'm going for it.
Okay. Jack's going for top. Peter, from the slightly more objective view.
Top. I mean, it's really difficult not to say top, just because, you know, I just feel with Sheffield United and West Brom, there's more adaptation period probably required than Silver needs. And I can't see other sides in this division being able to compete with Fulham squad. I feel like they should finish top. That doesn't, I get, you know, come the end of August and Fulham haven't won three games, suddenly it's, well, maybe not, but yeah, Fulham should win the league.
I'm normally the optimistic one when doing these kind of predictions, but I am going to say second. I just have a feeling that things won't be that smooth.
I'll take it, mate.
I'll take it, and it'll be absolutely fine, but I think it might be second and not that comfortable. I think we might be talking kind of like West Brom from two seasons ago, where it was second, but really, like, there was not much glory to it by the end. Maybe it's just my ultimate pessimism of being a Fulham fan and the fact that everyone's tipping us to do so well. I feel like we're there to be slightly got at, but also I do recognize that a squad of our quality should be up there automatically, really, and therefore that's why I'm gonna go second on the predictions.
If we don't, I think mine carries, if we don't lose more than two players between here and the end of August, two first team players, I think we'll be there or thereabouts.
I really think Jack's point though about this start is so important. The more I think about it, you know, if Fulham don't pick up good points in these opening games, what that does for the mindset of these players, you know, they're all professionals and I'm sure they'd give everything. But if I'm in that situation and I've been promoted before, not really made an impact in the Premier League, I've been asked to do it again, or I'm a player who wants to play in the Premier League, looking at the gruel that is the Championship, it's so impactful, this little period here. Getting that right mindset, getting that positive frame of mind, maintaining what we feel right now is key. I think if we then did predictions at the end of August, I think they may be very different. I think we can only go with what's in front of you, and what's in front of us now is automatics, absolutely.
Okay. Next one, player of the season. So obviously this again is a bit of a subjective one. Let's just go for who we think the fans will pick as the player of the season. Obviously we may disagree with that come the end of the year, but who do we think might end up as player of the season?
Fabio Carvalho.
Okay.
32 games. That's what we're going for. 32 games for Fabio Carvalho. 8 goals, 12 assists.
Okay. I mean, like, it's an interesting
one. Very precise.
Because I think when it comes to player of the season, I remember like the season that Ryan Sessegnon was his breakthrough, Tim Ream was the player of the season. It never quite goes in the direction.
Not the fans player of the season, though, was it?
Yeah, fans player of the season was Tim Ream.
Didn't Sess win one of them and Tim Ream won the other? I think fans are always a bit like, oh, if someone's won the official player of the season, let's give it to someone else for...
Well, Sess won tons of awards, like the EFL player of the season, didn't he? Much to Wolves fans' annoyance, because they thought that... Ruben Neves should have got it. And I think they're still wound up about that 3 years later. It's hard to know, really. Peter, player of the season?
Kenny Tete. I feel like this could be a good season, especially if he hangs around. I think he's way too good for this level. If he can avoid injuries, play every game, which I'm sure he may do, I think he would be a really important player and will do really well in Silva's system. And it will be very key in the way that he plays and how exposed they can be defensively, having someone who is as good one-on-one as he is. I think that will be a big, big vote winner. Otherwise, I would say Carvalho, but I just don't know how many games he'll get, and I'm sure he'll do very well and everyone will love him, but I think Kenny Tete might be Mr. Consistent.
See, my one is, and I think I'm fairly nailed on, like I could put money on this, is Harrison Reed,
yeah.
I think that DM role always gets loved by fans, and I think he is a fans player in the way that he hassles and harries and he's all across the pitch and stuff. And he didn't win it last season, but I think he very much could have. Especially if performances had kind of carried on at that Everton level where he was sensational. So I think if Harrison Reed stays, and that's still a caveat, I think it's fairly safe that he's staying next season.
Yeah, he took the number 6 shirt. I think he's going to stay.
But yeah, Harrison Reed is my prediction. Right. Interesting one here. I'm going to go for second top scorer. I think we can all be fairly sure that Mitrovic will be the top scorer. We can't be 100% certain. And you can always go for Mitrovic as second top scorer if you like as option. But who do you think will be Fulham's second top scorer this season?
Harry Wilson, 9.
Okay. I mean, given his scoring record, I guess he's a fairly safe bet, isn't he?
I actually think that Harry Wilson will spend this season being incredibly inconsistent and frustrating, but he'll score 9 goals.
Yeah. That was a bit like what he was at Bournemouth last year. Really inconsistent, really frustrating, but then not last year, year before last. Goodness me. We've moved on. but he still scored 7 and was the top scorer. So I would also say Harry Wilson.
I think he'd be like a well-liked Andre Schürrle. I think he'll shoot from everywhere.
A well-liked Andre Schürrle and Anthony Knockaert that occasionally finds the back of the net.
I think he'll get double digits. I think he's very good at finding space in the box, and he's very good for cutbacks and things. And if Silva wants to play that way with his fullbacks in the byline and cutting back, he'll be Harry Wilson. He'll be on at the end of quite a few of them. I wouldn't be surprised if he's rivaling
Stephanie Hansen.
Yeah, I think it's hard to look past Wilson for this one as well. So I will also go Wilson. The only interesting one for me is how much Cavallero plays.
Yeah.
From last season, we clearly found out that his finishing is not the greatest, but I'm wondering if there might just be a little Cavallero revelation where he plays some important games for us this season and scores a few important goals. He did score a few important goals last year. You know, he has a knack of getting into the box and sometimes finishing, but obviously we saw last season his confidence was absolutely shot, but maybe under a new manager, maybe without all that pressure on him like he had for so many parts of last season, we may see Cavallero also chip in with a few important ones. Okay, right. This is just rest of the championship stuff now. You've both gone for Fulham for top spot. I've gone for Fulham for second. So who do you think will be the other automatic promotion place?
Blades.
Oh, goodness me. We're going for the same answers, aren't we? Our way through.
I like this Ismail West Brom side, but I think that they are... There's a few more miles on the clock than he would like for a lot of that team, I think. I think they'll fall short. But I think they'll start really well. I think West Brom will be top two until like January, and then they'll fall away a bit. And I think that Sheffield United will make a late dash and nick that second spot.
Okay. Peter, you're going for the same answer.
Yeah, on the basis of their squad, actually. I think their squad is really good for the championship. There's a lot of goals in attack. I know they don't seem that at Premier League level, but Rian Brewster and Oli McBurnie, when they were last in the championship, were very, very effective. Obviously, they've got Slavisa Jokanović. They will play attacking football. I think they've got so many goals in them that they'll be up there. And I think, you know, as I said earlier, I just think the Ismail... Ismail's job is a little bit more difficult in that it will take a little bit longer to adapt, but could be wrong, but I think it will be Sheffield United and Fulham.
So I might go for an outside bet here, but I really think QPR.
I was going to say, I have them as playoff winners.
I honestly think QPR could, and actually you could see a situation next season that if Brentford, I hope they go down, but I actually think they might stay up, where you have all four West London sides in the Premier League next season. I just think they were so good at the end of last season. They got 44 points in the second half of last season's championship. They've kept that team together, including our very own Stefan Johansson, who made such a big impact. They've got several good players and a good manager in Mark Warburton. So that is my outside bet for the top two, as much as it pains me to say. Okay, right. I guess rather than trying to pick like 3-6 in the playoffs or whatever, maybe let's just go for playoff winners. Jack, you said QPR.
Yeah, I think it is. I've watched them a lot in preseason because, well, they're an interesting side and they've played quite a lot of interesting sides as well. They were excellent against a pretty much full strength Leicester. They played a kind of second string Man United side that still had a lot of very good players in it, and they battered them. It's interesting. I think that Charlie Austin as his lone striker is actually a weak point. I don't think he has the movement and to do that. But if they're going to go 4-3-3, I think that it's not going to be him. It's going to be Lyndon Dykes that kind of leads the line. They might keep Austin as kind of that rotation piece. But yeah, I think you're right. They brought in Andre Dizel, who I think is a really clever little player and will be a real kind of nice bit of business in the midfield for them. And I think that they've just brought a few very sensible players in, you know, as a full. Like, yes, they made all the loan signings permanent: Austin, Sam Field, Steph Joe, obviously, and Jordy Device off Hull. And they brought in Jimmy Dunn as well, who was at Burnley. And I thought we started to get a couple of minutes in the Premier League and then didn't quite get through that brick wall, which is the Burnley defence, which has proved impossible to break into. I just think that QPR are in a good place. I don't think they're good enough to get to the automatics. I don't think they're quite there yet. I think they're still a little bit too up and down. They're a bit sort of score four, you score three, which is fun and it's great value and they're really good entertainment, but they're a little bit chaotic, I think, to get to the automatic spots. But I do think that chaos could be really, really useful in the playoffs, and I think they'll do well. I really do think I have them down as playoff winners.
Peter?
I like QPR. I do like QPR. And the fact that they've made their loanees permanent is a really, really good step. And I'm a big admirer of Mark Warburton as well. But I just don't know if they're going to have the long... I worry about them in the playoffs in terms of the semi-finals and the finals. But then also, I think over the season, what would stop them getting automatics would just be the length of the season. And and whether they have the depth to cope with an injury crisis or fatigue as the like. So definitely playoffs for me, but I think West Brom will do it just about. I think their squad is good enough. I know everyone's saying that the three that go down are coming back up, but it is very difficult to look beyond them. I think if the one team, I mentioned them before, I think Stoke could push them. I think once they get Tyrese Campbell back, they've got someone who was really, really impressive before he had a serious injury. And they've brought in, I think, Mario Vrančić. They brought in Sam Surridge from Bournemouth as a backup forward as well. I think they're in a decent enough place. I think they could surprise a few people. I guess the other one we haven't even mentioned is Bournemouth. And it just depends what Scott Parker's football looks like with them and
Bournemouth
what they
finish
can do.
Ninth, mate.
Yeah, well, outside the playoff, who knows? They'll be in a bit of bother if they don't go up. So they're a decent enough squad, but I can't see them coming through the playoffs. I know Parker masterminded it with Fulham, but with that, they're a very young team, Bournemouth, losing a bit of experience, and I think they may need to reset.
It's just a bit of a worry for them because they've brought in the world's scariest man, Emiliano Marcondes, in order to obviously try and get the players into a mindset that they can fight. But unfortunately, you know, that's just the way the world. I think the rest of the players might be too scared and then fail to play this year. So I think Scott shot himself in the foot there.
I cannot wait for Marcondes to come back to the cottage. I think actually Parker may be saved from a negative reaction, which I don't think he deserves, by the way, hopefully by Marcondes starting on the bench. I cannot wait for him to touch the ball in that game. That will be wonderful. I think my playoff pick would be Sheffield United is what I've got down. I think that we've seen that Slavisa Jokanović has the pedigree to go ahead and win playoff matches. I think that Sheffield United team is incredibly experienced. And I think if they ended up in the playoffs, which I think might be what happens because they might have a slow start and might leave it too late to get into the top two, I think that then their experience plus Jokanović would be a serious combination for them to do well in the playoffs. So that is my playoff prediction. Just quickly, any like strong tips for relegation? You don't necessarily need to pick all three. I'm going to guess, Jack, that a certain Derby County are on that list.
Yeah, obviously. I think the one that I'm genuinely a bit scared for is Huddersfield. They just don't really show me anything that they've brought in that suggests they're going to do better. They brought in Jordan Rhodes, who's used to be a cheat code at this level and now hasn't scored a goal for about 2 million years. So I don't think that's going to be the thing. He's going to score against us. Of course he is. I'm worried for Huddersfield. I like their manager, Carlos Corberan. I think he's a good bloke, but I'm just a little bit scared that they don't have the depth in order to basically to kick through it and kick on. So yeah, I'm a little bit worried about Huddersfield Town.
There are a couple of teams who you would have who are doing quite well last year who could be set for some difficult seasons. Obviously Swansea are in a bit of a predicament now that Steve Cooper's walked out on them. Is it Russell Martin they've appointed?
Yeah,
Russell Martin's come in. Obviously he's won plaudits for the way he plays, very possession based football. That will go down well there, but you know, looking at losing obviously captain Matt Grimes, who I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit. I wonder with it with side like that. I don't think they'll go down, but they may struggle. Another one is Reading because of their financial situation. They're under embargo. And then also Blackburn, who now that Danny Ings has miraculously just apparated to Villa out of nowhere, I can see Southampton coming in for Adam Armstrong and
They're already in for Adam.
There we go. So lose Adam Armstrong and they're in a difficult situation. Obviously they had Harvey Elliott and other really effective loanees.
Might be what saves them if by between
absolutely.
That
I think that's the key, isn't it? I mean, Tony Mowbray seems to have a really good effect on them. Tosin Adebayo has won, went down to Blackburn and did very, very well. And I think Premier League clubs know what they get with Blackburn, but as things stand, it may be a bit tricky for them. What I would say is the three that came up, I'm pretty sure, I'm fairly confident they'll all stay up. Blackpool play some really good football, especially towards the back end of the season. Neil Critchley's done a really good job there. Peterborough have got a good base. And so have Hull, who walked League One last year. So with it being a bit weaker, I think I can see all three of them staying up. So they shouldn't be taken lightly.
I'm a little bit concerned for Bristol City. They've obviously relied a lot on loanees over the past couple of years. It does feel like a bit that Nigel Pearson has a bit of a job on his hands here. They've brought in a couple of his old Leicester boys to try and stem the tide. Matty James, Andy King, you know, we're talking about a 30-year-old and a 32-year-old, if I'm not mistaken.
I find it really surprising with Bristol City, because you look at everything around that club. They've obviously got a big fan base, or certainly a big pool for their fan base. They upgraded the stadium. The stadium looks like gorgeous. And I know like trophies aren't won on how nice your stadium looks, but everything about that club screams like quite a bit of ambition. And yet since Johnson went, they just have done nothing, and could have been sucked into it last year if it wasn't for the fact that Derby and Sheffield Wednesday was just so bad that they just ended up not getting anywhere near.
Yeah, it's a funny one. Like, I'm not convinced that they're going to struggle, but like, I do think it's a bit of an odd one that they haven't really strengthened. I mean, there's some players in this squad. There's obviously Chris Martin, who we all know well. He's 32 now. Vyman's 29. Naki Wells is 31. You know, the big guns in this side are starting to age. And I think that there's a little bit of a worry that this squad is starting to get a little bit older than it should be. They haven't really reinforced young. And there's that kind of element that I'm a little bit scared for them. Now, I think they might just about be okay, but I'm concerned that they're going to be in the mix.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there are predictions. Feel free to clip this up and replay it to us in May and show us how wrong we were. We'll gladly take it on the chin. We'll take another quick break, and then we've got some listener questions and transfer gossip afterwards.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. It's Sammy here with Jack and Peter. So let's come on to some questions. And aptly, Fulham Transfers has asked this one, Peter. What the hell is going on with Grimes and Mooney's? Exclamation mark. 23 likes. Most popular question on there.
What the hell is going on? Okay. Rodrigo Mooney's. Everyone knows that Fulham like them. Everyone knows that Fulham are in talks with Flamenco about signing him. Those talks have been pretty positive. They've been moving in the right direction for a while. I think we've seen from reports in Brazil that things are very close to an agreement. Last week, I said that there wasn't an agreement. And I think what's happened is what's come out, obviously, is that Mooney's has now contracted COVID. That would delay anything. However, I don't believe that that's going to affect the deal. Now, if it does go through, and it is still an if, from what I've heard, the last time I checked in was yesterday at time of recording. And I was told that a deal is not yet done. However, reports in Brazil overnight say that we are at that point. But either way, should it happen, we are still looking at a period before we would see Mooney's. One, because he's got COVID at the moment. And then two, because of the quarantine period. Now, I've been trying to look into this. I don't believe there is any kind of an exemption for an athlete from Brazil. I may be wrong. And maybe his contraction of COVID changes things. Maybe there is a way to do it. Still looking into that.
I'm pretty certain there isn't, because at the end of the day, I don't think the government could give a monkey's.
Well, they're a red list country with a very specific variant that's vaccine potentially evasive. So yeah. I'd be very surprised. Either way, even if he did arrive, I just couldn't see him being involved until probably September. And it's every possibility that this wouldn't be confirmed for a while. So you may still hear a bit more about him. the rumblings of what's going on without any confirmation for a little bit, but we'll see. Matt Grimes. Matt Grimes, I think, is a player that Fulham like. I don't think when the foot reports first started to surface, there was actually much that had happened. Now, that could change, but I don't want to stick my neck out and say it will change. Either way, Fulham are interested in Matt Grimes. He was available, as we were mentioning, because of Swansea's sort of situation. They've got a couple of players that they could probably cash in on. Grimes is one of them. Grimes won't be a Swansea player by the end of the summer. There could be competition for him, but he's one Fulham like, so time we will see on that, and that could move actually quite quickly, but we'll see.
Is there anyone else, Peter, that's on the radar that we should be know about? I know there was talk of Will Hughes earlier in the window. I'd imagine you wouldn't bring in Will Hughes and Matt Grimes, but yeah.
No, and I think the strength that Fulham have in midfield is interesting, and I do wonder to what extent a lot of this is contingent on what happens with the Fulham squad. We talked about John Michael Seri. He's done well in pre-season. He got a run out against Charlton. Was that a case of putting him in the shop window? Potentially, a bit like what happened with the Sheffield Wednesday game in the Carabao Cup last year. Obviously, Andre Frank-Anguissa is going to attract interest, and that's going to continue to the window. So whether there's this sort of contingency to be like, let's have these almost ready to go. If these go, they will need to be replaced, I'm sure. And obviously, Tyrese Francois has forced himself into contention as well. So that may change things. But in terms of others, I'm aware of my colleague, Adam Leventhal, who covers Watford, has highlighted that Nathaniel Chalobah and Will Hughes are players that Marco Silva likes. Obviously, he worked with them at Vicarage Road. Will Hughes is currently in the under-23s. He's in a bit of a contract standoff. So those are two names that would definitely work in a Silva system. Aside from that, there's no one else who's overly concrete. I expect there'll be someone. I think that there could be more. Silva himself has said that. So let's wait and see.
Yeah, I guess at the moment, it's a bit weird for Fulham to be in this position where actually, like, things are still up in the air with the transfer window going, but not like last season where I'm like, we need six reinforcements before the end of the window for us to have any kind of chance. Like, a lot of it depends on who leaves, who goes. There's still stuff in the air, still stuff to be decided. And it wouldn't be Fulham if there wasn't some business done on transfer deadline day.
Yeah, also, but there's a point to be made on that, I think, which is that because we're not relying on the business done on transfer deadline day right now, it feels like that's okay, right? Anything brought in on deadline day would be a bonus.
Yeah.
And that's a nice place to be. It's not a case of anything brought in on deadline day is exactly what we need and we're 6 weeks into the season. It's anything brought in on deadline day might, you know, could be a factor later on in the season and someone that we can work with, which is a nice place to be. And that's how deadline day should work, right? It should be a positive, should be a bonus, should look at things and think, right, this is where things are going to happen.
Chris F asks, are you able to cover what rules, if any, there will be with regards to COVID restrictions at the game on Saturday? Well, first of all, Chris, the game's on Sunday, so don't turn up on Saturday would be my first little bit of advice. Secondly, if the Charlton game was anything to go by, there was no real checks or restrictions in place as far as you know, but obviously it was a much lower crowd on Saturday against Charlton, so maybe there might be some more provisions, but my understanding is that there probably won't be kind of any COVID restrictions. Obviously, like, be safe, take a test if you're unsure, etc. get vaccinated if you can. I'm not here to like do the government's job on that one. But also, what's quite interesting, which I noticed, is that the government are looking to try and build bring in proof of vaccination passports, whatever, for large crowds from September. The threshold that they were talking about with that, and nothing's confirmed yet, was 20,000. Now, Fulham's capacity without the Riverside stand at the moment is under 20,000. So we may not fall into that category once it comes in, but we'll have to wait for the government restrictions. And honestly, your best port of call, obviously, is A, email the club directly, and B, the Fulham Supporters Trust will have a lot more information than we do. But certainly that was my experience and Jack's experience as well at the game on Saturday. Harry Blakely asks, should post-match interviews be carried out in the infinity pool? Peter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'd be up for that. Depends on the weather, though. I mean, I wouldn't want to do that in the rain. Or in the snow, or any, well, to be honest, for most of the season. Actually, no, I retract that. No, I do not want to do that.
Is a yes from me, though.
Yeah?
Yeah, why not?
Pina colada in one hand.
Wait, are we talking broadcast post-match interviews? Is broadcast fine? If it's you can have me, I can do my classic pitch side, but if they want to do it in the pool, that's fine by me.
Oh, fair enough. At the moment, Harry, unknown, but I would love to see it. I'd love to see some reports being done from the Infinity Pool like they do.
I think that's inevitable though, isn't it? I mean, that's just definitely going to happen.
Monaco Grand Prix style. Yeah. More serious question from Jordan says, who do you think will be our main centre-back pairing this year? I have a feeling it's Tosin and Ream to start the year with Kongolo and Hector in rotation. Would love to hear your thoughts on this competition. Peter, it was Ream and Tosin against Charlton. Do you expect that to stay for Saturday, Sunday? I'm being like Chris. It's definitely Sunday.
Yeah, I would think it would be Tosin and Ream at this point. Obviously, Kongolo's not up to speed yet. And I think once he's fit, I think maybe there would be a question. But I think with Tim Ream, because of his experience, because of his leadership qualities, because of the way he plays as well, I think he fits quite nicely into what Silva wants to do. It would make sense to have his steady hands on what is a relatively young team. Yeah, I think Ream and Tosin, but what's interesting, obviously, with the names you mentioned, there's also Alfie Morton back and in contention. One of those players will certainly go on loan. And there's Maxime Lemarchand as well, who I think you'd think he may be one who will go on loan as well. So, yeah, there's competition in those areas. And I think we may see one or two depart because it's too many centre-backs.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Tim Ream is going to be the starting echelon here. And unless he does something to lose his place, I'd be surprised if Tim Ream is not the starting partner of this partnership for the entire season, to be honest. I think, as Peter says, it's not just about the tangibles, right? It's about leadership. It's about that calm head at the back. Without Tom Kearney, who's still, we're not sure when his return date from injury is, he's going to wear the armband. He's going to be that kind of calm head with the armband. I think it's important to remember that, like you say, there's not huge amounts of leaders, I don't think, in this team at the moment, especially in terms of experience. And I think Tim Ream brings that at the back. He brings a calm head. He's still a quality player at this level. And I think that he's going to be a key part of how Silva looks to build. So yes, there is an argument that maybe Tosin and Kongolo is the best centre-back partnership in terms of actual talent and calibre. But I think that given what Tim Ream brings to this side, he's going to be a key part of this team, I think, for the foreseeable.
Peter, I think we should go more in depth on Tim Ream next week following your interview in The Athletic, which people should go and read. But I thought you just might want 30 seconds just to kind of talk about the interview, how it was, and where people can find it.
Yeah, no, I spoke to Tim after the Charlton game, and I think as Jack's right in terms of his leadership qualities, and I think the way he spoke not only about the season to come and obviously the impact that Marco Silva has had, but also last season, he didn't pull any punches about how it went. He said it was awful, so it was really, really difficult, doubly hard for him, obviously, not being involved. It was quite diplomatic, I think, over whether a change was needed, but he did make the point that I think he thought it was mutually beneficial, and he did give a sort of steer on where things were. And it's interesting contrasting that sort of feeling at the end of last season with where we are now, and sort of underlines how actually Scott Parker's departure and bringing in Silva has done probably a fair amount of good across the board for all parties. Tim sort of talked about his new sort of responsibilities he has under Silva. So obviously with Tyrese and Fabio stepping into the first team, he's sort of looking out for them, looking after them. And we also touched on social media because Tim's obviously been so active on social media, but also been a recipient of a lot of unfair and unwarranted and quite harmful abuse. And he talked about that and Tom Kearney's project to provide a new social network which requires identification. And there are obviously some flaws with that. But at the same time, trying to act and actually do something and put something in place that can make a difference. But as ever with Tim Ream, he speaks really, really well. He's very, very honest, and it's definitely worth your time. And he talks about the impact Silva's had too, and how he sort of fits in with centre backs and the secret to being the one constant, having played alongside 15 different central defenders. That's not the same as defensive partners, because he's probably had more, but he's had a fair few in his 6 years at the club.
Exactly. Well, more on Tim Ream on next week's podcast. But if you want to read it, head to The Athletic. And if you don't subscribe to The Athletic yet, you can get 33% off your subscription by using the URL, theathletic.com/Fulham Pod. One final question, Jack, here from Chris Ballard. He says, in which home game do we beat our Craven Cottage goal tally from last season? I'm going at home to Swansea City on September the 29th. So basically, how long will it take us to score 9 goals at home this season?
9 goals at home. Okay, I'm going.
That's a great question.
Yeah, I'm going keep. Well, no, actually, it's a lie. I'm going to go. Ooh. I'm going to go one before you, mate. I'm going to go Fulham Reading, 18th of September.
Fulham Reading, 18th of September.
Yeah.
Peter, we've got in that time Middlesbrough, Hull, Stoke, and then Reading is the 4th game. You got Swansea as the 5th game. What are you thinking?
I think Reading could be a fill your boots, but I think the games before might be a bit tricky. And actually, looking back at some of Silver's results at his previous clubs before he moved to England, he does like a couple of 1-0s, 2-1s, 2-0s. So maybe I'm going to delay until to Swansea. I'll delay to Swansea on the 29th, but before the end of September. Definitely.
Okay, I'm just going to stick my neck out to be confident and go for Stoke 3 games in. Come on, we can get 3 goals in each game and we'll hit the magic 9. I think a sportsman's bet on this, maybe a fiver each way, or like pints, first round of the pints when we next see each other,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, okay, fine. Done.
Great question from Chris Ballard.
There's a great thing going on. It's just reminded me of there's a game in a pub near me called the King's Arms in Hamwell, and they're playing Premier League Pontoon, where basically you pay a tenner to get in and everybody gets a team. And your team is the first two ever to get to 21 goals in the Premier League this year wins. But if you score, you have to end the game on 21 goals. So if you score the 22nd goal within 90 minutes of the same game, you go back to zero. What a great game.
Because you'd naturally think, well, just to get Man City, but yeah, obviously you have to then hit 21. That's actually, maybe you're better off having a slightly lower team that scores maybe 2 goals a game or something like that, that might be more likely to hit the number rather than City. You tend to score 5 or 6 in a game. That is astonishing. If someone hasn't turned that into an app or some kind of online game soon, Jack, then there's money to be made there. That is terrific. Okay, well, thank you so much for listening to the podcast today. Our big fat Fulham Championship preview podcast of the season. It absolutely rolls off the tongue. So yeah, we're really looking forward to Sunday. And from here on in, Fulhamish full service resumes. So we will be back on Monday evening, looking back at the Middlesbrough game. And then us three will be back next Thursday, where we're going to discuss Tim Ream in a little bit more depth and be looking ahead to the Huddersfield game, Fulham's first away game of the season. All that's left for me to do is thank my guests today. Jack Collins, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sammy.
And Peter Rutzler, thank you.
Oh, thank you very much, Sammy. It's always a pleasure.
Enjoy the press box on
Sunday. I will.
With your monitors and
my replays
and Wi-Fi. You'll be having a lovely time. You'll be right. You'll be tweeting pictures of the Riverside stand even faster than you normally do.
I did get quite a few requests to keep going with that. I said I'd discontinue, but there is some popular demand. But then again, everyone there can also do it. So I feel like
how's the food in the press box? That's the big question.
There's no food in the press box at the moment, mate. Still
none at all. Still
no. Straight in and straight out. Still, we'll get there. We upgraded to coffee and tea during last season, which was a big bonus. There's been rumours of some sandwiches at some places in the Premier League, so fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. You never know.
This is packed lunch still.
It's still my packed lunch, yeah.
With a tuna and cheese sandwich or something like that.
Yeah. Bang on, sadly. Sometimes some soup, bring in a flask. Very good on a cold day.
Yeah,
that is very you, Peter. All right, well, thank you very much for listening today. And come on, Fulham, on Sunday. Can we get a win in the first game of the season? Ruddy hope so. So thank you very much. Cheers for listening. Come on, you whites.
You whites.